This is Focus, our morning talk show. My name's David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're also pleased to have back here once again Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. She's on the program once a month. It's usually on a Tuesday. We changed things around just a little bit this time around, but it's the same program, same idea. If you have some problem, you're not quite sure how to solve it, you can get some advice. Maybe you are already thinking about the next growing season and what you'll be doing next year. That kind of question's fine. We can talk about houseplants. Any and all of that is great. 333-9455. That's for Champaign Urbana. Toll-free, 800-222-9455. And you could also send us an email if you want, will-talk@illinois.edu. Hey, glad to have you here.
Yes.
Once again.
Thank you.
So I was thinking, I was looking at some of your columns here, and you wrote a column last month, Will My Lawn Live? And I've been thinking about that, particularly because I know earlier in the summer when we were talking about how hard a summer it's been and how dry it was, and we were talking about brown patches, and you said, well, you know, it's possible that there people will have brown patches in their lawn that are not coming back.
Right.
I think I have some of those places that I was hoping that maybe once it got a little cooler and we got some rain, they would show signs of life, and they're not. Is it now too late to be doing overseeding?
Yeah, it is really late, because normally we would think of pretty much through August and September is usually when we think about, you know, actually doing any major reseeding. Now, if you have a small area, and I'm thinking just a few square feet, something that's not all that terribly big, you may want to just go ahead and try it to go ahead and overseed. The problem is... you know, if it starts to germinate and then we get into severely cold temperatures, the seedling may die. The other problem is that especially Kentucky bluegrass is notoriously slow when it comes to germinating, and it might take it 2 to 3 weeks depending on the temperature. Well, if we're already pushing it another couple of weeks, we're already into November, and then if it goes ahead and germinates, then we get and then obviously at that point, it's very likely we could have a cold spell. So you may not have the best success. You might want to try it if you just feel like you want to, but it really in the long run, you'd be better off waiting till April if you can stand it.
All right, so it should, for that thing at least, we'd probably have to say, okay, well, for this year, there's really nothing you can do.
Especially anything, you know, if I was really going to spend a lot of money and really do a whole overseeding and really spend a lot of time on it, then I probably wait until April. You'll just have a much better success in the long run and not feel like you're wasting your time and effort and money.
Yeah. And my lawn, I think the issue is not so much that the patches are really big, but there are a lot of relatively small places, which makes me wonder, what's the rest of the stuff there? I mean, was that the only actual real grass and it died? And the other stuff, who knows? All the weeds lived. It's green, but I'm not really sure what it is.
Yeah. I've actually been really surprised that the Kentucky bluegrass has come back as well as it has in some areas, even in my own lawn. I'm really quite surprised that some of it came back because it was looking pretty darn bad. But I also have these really large spots, and it generally was those full sun, maybe tended to be a little drier anyway. Those seem to be the spots that absolutely died. I think it would be one of those things that people want to roughen it up, you know, just take a garden rake or something. Yeah. And then actually, if they want to go ahead and oversee, what you could do is actually use something like perennial ryegrass, which tends to germinate much faster, and it tends to be a little bit more vigorous seedling. And it's perennial ryegrass, not annual ryegrass, which is a whole other kind of plant, which you don't want for a long-term lawn. So that might be something people want to try, just to sort of. But I am surprised at how well some of the grass has done. People had some of the turf-type tall fescues, they may find that those did just fine. They tend to be much more drought-resistant. And I have a section of my lawn that's the tall fescue, and actually did very well. I was surprised at how well it's come back as well.
So. Yeah. Man, it was hard. Things were looking so bad there. In my yard around in June. I think things were looking pretty nice. I could stand there and think, doesn't everything look nice here? Man, then the beginning of July, the spigot got turned off, and it was just everything just looked so horrible.
Yeah. And the good news, most of our turf grasses are cool season grasses, so that's their way to cope with stress anyway, is to go dormant. So part of that was perfectly normal for them to go ahead and go dormant during those really dry periods, but we certainly had an extended dry period. So I guess the bottom line is, now that we've had this little warmer weather, a little more moisture, hopefully in some areas, if it hasn't greened up by now, you can pretty well, what I say, kiss your grass goodbye.
Okay. Well,
I can say that, can I?
Yeah, I think so. I think you did. 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Taking your questions on things that grow in the home landscape. Sandy Mason is here. You have questions, you can give us a call. Well, so it's too late to do anything about grass. Yeah. You know, I got to wait until next year. What? And we're now at the point here, actually, recently, this past weekend was really nice. Mm-hmm. I was out in my yard, and I'm sure a lot of people were. We have still had some fairly warm days. So if you had the opportunity, you could be out doing things in your yard. Are there some particular things you would say, here's stuff to think about?
Well, I think one of the things is actually it's not too late to even think about like planting some things, like even garlic. I just planted some more garlic this past weekend. So October mm-hmm. is generally a good time to plant garlic. That would be for then you'd harvest it then next July. So it is one of those crops where you actually harvest it, you actually plant it and then harvest it the next year. So it's not too late for that. Certainly planting, you know, flowering bulbs of any kind, for the most part, you know, daffodils and tulips and all those things, and actually they do quite well if you go ahead and get them planted, and the ground seems to be, you know, somewhat moist to the point mm-hmm. where I think a lot of them will do well. So you might think about those, and even think about some of the what they call minor bulbs. Are things that actually are very easy to plant. You only have to dig about a 3-inch hole for them. So that'd be things like snowdrops. I know we've talked about these, some of those really early things like snowdrops and blue scillas. And there's lots of those kind of early small bulbs, easy to plant because you don't have to dig much of a hole at all. And then they'll come up very early, and even things like snowdrops, you can get them in late February, early March.
Yeah. And it's really nice when you start to see those things, because then it sort of says, yes, there will be spring, winter will end someday, and they're really nice. And right. And there are some snowdrops are white, but there are also some things that do have good color. There's a little yellow thing.
Oh, probably winter aconite.
Yes, aconite, which is a really pretty little yellow flower. So there are a number of things like that you can put in. And I think if you have a kind of a wilder sort of natural area, it's great to scatter those things in there. And then they also flower at slightly different times. So if you get the right things, you kind of mix them in there. There's always going to be a little something going
right,
on there.
Right, 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 which is really nice. And I actually, even with the winter aconite, I've noticed that, you know, that early, early season, there'll actually be some, like, some of the early flies and bees and stuff that come out might come out a little bit earlier when there's not much to eat. They'll go ahead and feed on those, so that's always good. So in a good way, you know, they're taking the pollen out of those. So that's a good thing, too. So okay. We'd like to see that.
I have a couple of callers here, and we'll get to them. Champagne, line one. To start us off.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
Hi, you can hear me?
Yes.
We just bought a house in Champaign, Southwest Champaign, and it has two maple trees in the front yard, and we are both novice gardeners, to say the least. And there's a big amount of ground cover ivy underneath those maple trees, which we like the look of, basically. It's going to need some attention, but my main question has to do with the leaves as they're now falling from the maple trees, and they're enormous trees, onto this ground cover. Can I just go through there with a rake, or am I just going to be destroying everything?
Just to try to get the leaves off?
Yeah.
You know, it would be a good idea. And you certainly could use either a leaf blower or a rake or something. And you don't have to get every single leaf off. You just don't want it to be really thick. Maple leaves tend to be one of those that tend to mat down. And sometimes they actually can kill the stuff underneath them because they mat so much. So I wouldn't worry about every single leaf. But if it's getting to the point where you can't see any of the ground cover through the leaves, then you might at least take off kind of that top layer or so of leaves. And you can use it just over the top surface of the ground cover. And usually you have pretty good success that way. And that's also true for your lawn. You know, I don't know if you happen to have any lawn underneath the maple trees, but it's another thing that can be. Usually those two things don't go together anyway, to be honest with you. Usually lawns and maple trees, usually maple tree wins every time. So it's good that you have ground cover. So that's a good thing.
Okay. But as long as the ground cover is showing through, then I don't need to worry.
Yeah. Right. And actually, that's just...
Let it rot down there.
Yeah. And then that's fine. It's just when it get really thick, that's when it might be an issue for the ground cover underneath.
Excellent. Yeah, we have a problem with leaf blowers. I mean, a philosophical problem with them.
I'm with you.
Okay. All right. And leaf suckers. Have you seen these vacuum things that actually suck up leaves? It's dreadful. Anyway, it's not
yeah.
your topic.
But. Yeah, that's a whole other topic.
Yes, we endorse rakes. They're fine.
Rakes are fine. I mean, it actually sort of, and they're fine. And actually leaves, I know a lot of times people think leaves are like a bad thing when they're falling down. But, it actually is a natural mulch. It's great for a lot of the beneficial insects and stuff. They need that kind of leaf litter. Actually, trees, if you think about it, trees, for the most part, they want that leaf litter underneath them. It's just a natural mulch. So leaves aren't necessarily a bad thing. So that's good. I think you have a good attitude about it.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
Well, good luck.
Most of the afternoon yesterday.
Yeah, raking leaves. Anyway. Keep thinking that. I have a good attitude. I have a good attitude.
Thanks for the call. We'll continue, and we'll go to line 4 in Washington, Illinois. Hello.
Yes. I like to mow my lawn rather long, but I've got two issues, and one of them is a weed that looks something on the order of a violet, but it's not fuzzy, and it gets a flower that looks a little bit like a violet. And I have tried 2,4-D, I've tried the Trimec things, and can't kill it. It just kind of, it'll get brown, but then it comes back and just as green as ever. And I was wondering, an old gentleman used to live down the street from me said lime. He said, if you got a lot of weeds in your lawn, put lime on it. Is there anything to that story?
Well, no. I mean, because the problem is, I've heard that before, that sometimes, and there certainly are some weeds that like more acidic soils, and then sometimes limes might help. But to be honest with you, by the time you lime it to the point where the weed doesn't like it, you're probably going to kill your grass, because grass likes it.
He had a fantastic looking lawn, and boy, he just put lime on it to no end. And so,
yeah. I suspect he's doing other things as well as lime, to be honest with you. I mean, that would be my thought, that there may be other things he's doing. Because, the soil pH, and lawns actually like it slightly acidic. They like it at like 6.5, 6.8. And as you're adding lime, you're just increasing that pH.
Right.
And so I wouldn't go that route. And I'm not sure is this Creeping Charlie? Do you know what that is?
I know what Creeping Charlie is. I get that from my neighbor. And I can knock that back pretty well with either the Trimec or the 2,4-D. But this other weed, it's a kind of a broad, roundish leaf. And there was a weed I heard one time earlier that they said they just about have to dig them out. In order to get it, you got to get the taproot and everything.
I'm sorry, I don't quite understand. I'm not sure what this is. You said it kind of looks like violets, but it's not violets.
Yeah, it's not. The flower looks like a violet, but the leaf is real smooth and. Okay, just a second here. I'm on a tractor. I'll take my answer on the rest of the answer offline.
Yes, sorry.
Okay, very good.
I think that's one of those things. I was afraid it was a police scanner. I thought it was a police scanner for a minute. I think probably the one thing is that this just brings up the whole idea of accurate identification.
Right.
We just really need, because it's really important with weeds, is that we need to know, is it an annual, a perennial, is it a biennial? If it's an annual, then we need to start thinking about, how do we deal with the seeds themselves, because we're not dealing with the individual plant each time. So I think it's just accurate identification, and I'm sorry, I can't quite figure out what that is, where it sort of looks like a violet, but it's not a violet. So I think that's one of those things that a picture would be good. If somebody wants to email me a picture, that'd be great. We actually have, the University of Illinois has a pretty good weed identification site, a website that you can go and look at pictures and kind of figure out what it is. So I think accurate identification, sort of figuring out from there. I think the bottom line with all the weed kind of issues that we might have is the biggest thing, and this is certainly going to be an issue for us next year because we start talking about all these brown spots, is whenever you have open soil, it's fair game for weeds. That's the first thing. That's their job, is to be those early invaders that sort of come in to those open areas. And so that's always an issue. And so we always try to combat it by the other end, making sure that the lawn is nice and thick and growing well, and we don't have those open spaces, and then it's much harder for weeds to come in. So I'm sorry, I don't know what that particular weed is, so it's hard to really talk about it. I'm surprised that Trimec and some of the other herbicides that he was talking about aren't dealing with it, because usually if it's going to kill off Creeping Charlie, it's probably going to kill off whatever this is.
Okay.
So that's why I'm wondering if timing isn't an issue for this, is that maybe one of the winter annuals. Henbit is right now one of those little winter annuals that's coming up right now, and it will go ahead and germinate now, and then it would actually go ahead and flower very, very early in the season, and that's what people see in the fields. There'll be this constant sort of just full mat of that kind of purple look to it, and that's henbit. It's a winter annual. Germinates now, flowers early, early spring.
Okay.
And so that's a tough one to control, because it's not that, you know, by the time we think about controlling it, it's done. You know, it's already set seed and it's ready for the next year. So that's one of those that I think it's really important to find out what it is. And maybe it is, might be henbit, because it kind of has a little purple flower. I don't know.
Would it be blooming now, though?
It would be coming up now. Okay. Now, if you had some somewhat mature plants, he could have some flowers, but typically right now it's just a little seedling, but it has kind of that leaf that looks a lot like a violet, so he might look toward henbit.
Right, is that H-E-N-B-I-T?
Yep. Henbit. Why it's called henbit, I have no idea.
Okay. And how would people find this weed identification site that you say the U of I has?
Yes, it's actually through Crop Sciences, and they can just go, I think that they just do University of Illinois Weed ID, it should pop up. Just go to Crop Sciences. I think it has under extension or something along those lines. It'll have a nice website for that. And it takes you through. It has kind of a key where it kind of takes you through what weeds it might be, and then kind of goes from there.
So. All right. Very good. Sandy Mason is here with us. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. She's on the program once a month, usually on a Tuesday. She is here to be a resource for you. And we have a number of people on the show who are like this, who are here to try to answer specific questions about specific problems. And we have an auto mechanic, and we have a guy who does home maintenance, and we have a lot of people who do health programs. And then in addition to that, we have other shows, a range of other shows, people who are experts on particular topics. We have a lot of authors. We've done interviews about science and history. And in all of these things, people like you are actively involved, because you can be a part of the show. It's a live show. You have a question, you can phone in and be a part of it. You're not passive. And one thing we know about people who listen to public radio is they're not. They're not passive listeners, that's for sure, because they tell us what they think, and that's a good thing. They have a feeling of ownership. And the reason they have that feeling of ownership is that they're also supporters of the station. So this is just one of a couple of times in the year that we interrupt the programming. And the rest of the time, we're doing the shows. Well, at times like this, we want to remind you just how important listeners are for their financial support of the station. Right now, we're raising the money that will pay for next year's programs. We've set a goal, and we'd really like to meet that goal of 1,200 people, hearing from 1,200 people by the time we finish, and this will be tomorrow night. So if you've been thinking about it, maybe it's time for you to renew, and you are a supporter, or you've never made a contribution. It would be great for you to do that right now. And it's really easy. It will take just a moment. You can call, if you like to do it that way, you can call 217-244-9455, or you can do it online. And I think now more and more people are choosing to make the contribution online. That's really easy too. And that's Will Pledge, all is one word, W-I-L-L, pledge, willpledge.org. And we thank you very much. We have some other folks here who would like to call in. We're taking your questions on things that grow in the home landscape. We do this every month with Sandy. And the number is 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Here's someone in Robinson, line four. Hello.
Good morning. Sandra, this is your father in Robinson.
I haven't heard from you in so long.
I need to have David confirm that you guys will be reverting to the second Tuesday instead of this oddball Monday.
Yeah. Yes.
That was my fault. In November,
yes. It'll be back on the regular day.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thanks for calling, Dad. I need to
know whether I should stay home on Tuesdays or go gadding about. Thank you.
Thanks.
All right. Well, yes, it is true. The Sandy had something with your schedule. So something you she
it's
got
a
better
thing.
Offer. That's what
I
it was.
No, yeah. It's a good thing. Actually, yes. I was at the International Master Gardener Conference in West Virginia, and our master gardeners who do have a project out at the Champaign County Juvenile Detention Center. They actually have a year-round gardening project where they do things with the residents as well as have a garden, and they have programs and all this kind of thing. It actually won second place in the Youth Award at the International Master Gardener Conference, and we were there to get the award, and and enjoy their and really enjoy what they've done for years out there at the Juvenile Detention Center. And it was well-deserved for them to get that kind of recognition. So I had a good reason. I was in West Virginia.
Okay. On your website, is there a picture of you in your gown?
Yeah.
Going up to accept the award?
The award, I know. Oh, it was very official, very official.
Anyway, you have questions. Now is the time to get them in. 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. You can also send us an email if you like. That's will-talk@illinois.edu. So you were talking earlier about, well, what can you do at this time of year? Oh, I know what I wanted to ask you. In our yard, we have some daffodils. I don't know how old they are. They've been there for a long time, mm-hmm. and they keep coming up. And there are some tulips that I planted that's still doing pretty well. And then there are some places where I planted tulips where, maybe I got a couple of blooms out of them, and that was it. Mm-hmm. So clearly there must be a difference in varieties of right. these things for longevity. Is there some way that you can know when you're planting something, or at least have the expectation that they're going to keep coming back for a long time?
Right. Well, I think one thing, I mean, daffodils, for one thing, they last forever. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can find where there's an old farmstead and the daffodils are still coming up. So yeah. they're one of those that people really want a long-term flowering bulb. I think daffodils, you can't beat them. And the nice thing is there's lots and lots and lots of them, from the very small ones. There's some of them like Baby Moon, and some of those are very small flowers. There's Tete that comes up very early in the season. It's only about 6 inches tall, to the really large ones that actually come in, much later in the spring. So you could easily have like 6 weeks of nothing but daffodils just by timing different ones and having different ones. So that's a nice thing. You could go ahead and do that. We don't have the intense colors in daffodils that we really have in tulips, and I think that's why tulips are so popular, because that's when we get in the vivid reds and really, really bright pinks and some of those. Tulips, on the other hand, what you'll find is some of them are not particularly long-lived, and the Kaufman tulips tend to be ones that tend to last a little bit longer, so you might look at the Kaufman-type tulips. Those tend to come back pretty regularly from year to year. Probably the one thing with tulips is they really don't particularly like our weather all that much. Mm. They don't like particularly wet soils, so you can't really plant them anywhere, maybe where you have annuals and you're watering all the time. That would kill tulips every time. So you really have to watch what you're doing through the summertime, especially with tulips, because if you're watering a lot, you're probably going to kill off the bulbs. Even though we don't see them, there's still things going on down there. So sometimes it's how we're taking care of the area where you might find the tulips are just not doing well. So I think out of those are probably the things that sort of keep in mind. But most of those smaller bulbs tend to be ones, crocus, and a lot of the smaller bulbs will continue to come back year after year if the squirrels don't get them, because that's the other issue. Which is the other nice thing about daffodils is that squirrels don't like them. They're actually poisonous, and you don't have to worry about squirrels when it comes to daffodils. And I thought a master gardener told me, and I thought this was a great technique. If you have trouble with squirrels, like digging up the bulbs or eating the flowers of tulips, just plant your tulips among a bunch of daffodils. So put the daffodils as sort of the fence line, the perimeter, and then put your tulips on the inside. They won't go through the daffodils to get to the tulips. I thought that was, I've tried it, and it works pretty well. So,
excellent. Very good. We have a couple callers here. Why don't we go and take one here, Indiana, line number 4 on the toll-free. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
This is sort of a question testing my memory. A few days ago, I was out looking around my house, and lo and behold, was a morning glory. Just bloomed, and particularly of a tint I had never seen before, so I photographed it, trying to find out, what somebody will call it. I went to my pastels. I couldn't find anything close to it. But I was just wondering about morning glories, when they bloom. Do they do this year? Once a year?
Well, they're annuals, so they pretty much, once they get going, I don't know if they're, they might be, although that wouldn't quite make sense. I was trying to think of the day length, if they're sensitive to day length. They might be sensitive to day length, and it might be where they like those shorter days, or the sunlight days. Mm-hmm. Or sunlight hours, I mean. So that might be some of that going on. But I've seen some of them flowering, too. So it must not be a long day issue. It must be a short day issue.
Okay. Yeah. I don't mind them at all. But when I was a little boy, my grandmother made me, well, it was one of my duties to go around and pull all the morning glories.
Oh, they are prolific, aren't they? If you ever
right
let
in
them
in the neighborhood, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They're.
I always thought it was silly because I always found a very beautiful flower. You know.
So how many times did you leave one? Just to see it flower.
I think she might be listening somewhere.
Oh, okay, never mind. I don't want you to give it
let
away.
That one slide, you know what I mean?
Okay, I don't want to get you in trouble. I don't want to get you in trouble.
Well, thanks a lot.
Thank you. This is Focus. We're taking your questions on things that grow in the home landscape. Sandy Mason is our guest. We'll take some more calls and talk in just a moment after a short break. This is Focus.
Support comes from the U of I Coordinated Science Laboratory, celebrating 60 years of science with an open public lecture, The Coming Tipping Point in Robotics, with Mark W. Spong, Dean of Engineering at the University of Texas, on October 27th at 7:30 p.m. at the Spurlock Museum. Details at csl.illinois.edu/60.
This is Focus, our morning talk show. My name's David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We are here weekday mornings with a range of topics for you. We hope that the show is useful and informative. People over the years have told us, now over the 30 years that we've been on the air, have told us they like the show and appreciate that. Well, what I want to do now is turn around to people who listen to this program. Maybe you listen on a regular basis. If you are not a financial supporter of this station, we hope that you will change that. Right now, we're raising the money that will pay for next year's programming, and listener support over the years, its importance has just grown and grown and grown. And we can't do what we do without that listener support. So right now, we hope that you would call, you could go online, you would make a pledge of financial support to the station. Here in studio with me is Amy Stewart Ray. She's part of our development staff. She's one of our pledge goddesses. And she's here to help me make the pitch.
Absolutely, David. I'm happy to be here this morning and ask our listeners to please call with your pledge of support right now. Call 217-244-9455 or go to willpledge.org and give us your financial support.
Maybe you think about it this way. I'm sure that for things that are important to you, maybe not as important as WILL, you spend money every day. You have daily newspaper. Who knows what? You make regular, as I do, you make regular stops for coffee, various kinds of places. You know, maybe think about that and then think about how important WILL is to you. Well, you know, maybe you could spend, say, $10 a month, make a contribution of $10 a month, which turns out to be $120 a year. Well, that's only a little over 30 cents a day, and there's probably plenty of stuff in your life that you spend more than 30 cents a day on, like coffee. I sure do. Well, I would hope that listening to WILL was as important to you as, well, okay, so maybe it's not as important to you as your daily coffee, but it's probably right up there. You know, the point is, if it's a regular part of your life, we hope that you'll be a financial supporter of the station. Just, you know, do your little share of helping to pay the cost of keeping the station on the air.
Absolutely. Show us that you really value the service that we provide you. And you can do that right now by calling 217-244-9455 and pledging at whatever level you feel able to, at whatever level you're comfortable. I'd like to remind you that for a $40 pledge, you get a monthly subscription to Patterns Magazine. For a $52 pledge, you get the member card, which provides 2-for-1 dining benefits at several area participating restaurants and other benefits as well. And also for that $75 pledge today, we offer a special thank you gift for our Focus listeners. That's the Focus 30th anniversary, a beautiful leather bookmark embossed with the IPM logo on it, a special gift for our Focus listeners today for $75 pledge.
Yeah, that's a cool thing. We would like to give out a lot of those with our thanks for people who are supporters of the show. The important thing here, the bottom line is here, we are here today to make sure that the programs you enjoy are here tomorrow. That is the bottom line. We want to keep the station strong. And to do that, we need to have the resources to buy programs, to maintain our equipment, to have our staff here. That's what this is all about. It's your investment today in programming that you will enjoy in the future.
Absolutely. And we do, as David mentioned, we depend on our friends of WILL for their support more and more every year. That is now 40% of our annual fundraising budget. It comes from the Friends of WILL. And I would urge you, if you are a regular listener, if you enjoy programs like Focus and you've never pledged before, please, now is a great time to begin your membership and join us and become a friend of WILL. Call 217-244-9455 or go to willpledge.org and show us your support.
And we're happy to have questions this morning for Sandy Mason. She is on the program once a month to answer questions about lawn and garden care, things that grow in the home landscape. We can do houseplants, too. She is a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. She is here usually on a Tuesday. This is just one. We just change it this time around in November, back to the regular schedule. It will be a Tuesday in November. Right now, though, she's here, and we have a couple of people ready to go. And if you have questions, call us. 333-9455. Toll-free, 800-222-9455. Next up, someone in Mahomet. Right here, line one. Hello.
Yes.
Hi.
I would like to ask Sandy, I've had pH done on my lawn, and it was 6.5. It's mainly clay. I was told to use lime on my evergreen bushes at the road. It killed two of them. And so now I'm told to use iron sulfate. I've always used muriacid on my evergreens. Why did that lime kill them?
I guess I would wonder why it was recommended. usually the evergreens like slightly acidic soil.
Yeah.
So lime wouldn't normally be something we would recommend. Maybe there was something else going on that I don't quite understand. But so usually lime we recommend if you're wanting the pH to go higher. We want it to be more alkaline, then we add lime. And for most of our landscape plants, we're actually very lucky in this area for the most part. Now, parts of Illinois, especially northern and kind of northeastern Illinois, they tend to be high pH anyway. But for kind of central Illinois, the pH tends to run 6.5, 6.8, which is right where the majority of plants want it.
Yeah.
So generally, that's why I mentioned the gentleman was asking about adding lime to the lawn. It's not something we recommend for most of any plants, to tell you the truth, simply because most of us
don't
like it.
You know that plant, that garden plant program that's on Saturday, he told me to use iron sulfate.
For the evergreens? Well, iron sulfate is one of those things that's going to add iron, and then the sulfur part of it actually will lower the pH.
Oh.
And so it kind of does the opposite of what lime does, where it actually makes it more acidic, which is generally what we'd want for evergreens and actually for a lot of the plants that we have.
Yeah.
So the iron sulfate's fine as a fertilizer. That's fine.
Yeah.
That's not an issue, but it's certainly the other direction from lime, so I'm not sure.
Yeah, I
what was going on there?
The lime, obviously,
because
it killed two of my bushes that had been there for years.
Yeah.
And I just heard it on one of these programs like yours, you know, where it was some garden expert said use lime, and so I bought a bag of lime, and it killed them. Even the muriacid, which I use every year, it doesn't really spruce them up. You know, it doesn't really make them green. So I guess try the iron sulfate, right?
So what kind of evergreens are these?
I don't know. They're kind of bushes at the end of the road, and they're about, I don't know, 2-3 feet high. They're not used. My ewes look better this year than they've looked in years. I don't know why. Probably all the rain.
Because part of it is, you know, for some of the evergreens, especially some of the junipers and stuff, they tend to have either kind of a yellow-green look to them especially during the winter time, and then even early spring, they'll kind of have this yellow-green, and that's perfectly normal. Some of them have more of a blue-green look to them. So I will tell you, junipers, the color, I don't know, was the color ever what you really wanted it, or they just never?
They were always green. I mean,
okay,
they
now they're just
at all. They were green.
Right.
And, they were really pretty, but I kept pretty muriacid on them, and it didn't really pick them up. So I thought, well, I'll try that lime, and of course, it killed two of them.
Right.
And so then this guy on Garden Sense the other day said, use iron sulfate or Plant Trust. He said Plant Trust has got everything in it.
Well, The one thing, the iron sulfate sometimes will green up plants simply because at high pHs, iron tends to be less available.
Oh.
So that's why we worry about pH, because it's whether those nutrients are available to the plant. And iron tends to be much more available at low pHs. And so by the iron sulfate is actually lowering the pH, but then also providing iron.
Okey-doke. So, I'll try that. Thanks so much.
Sure.
Okay, very good. And we'll go on to another caller here, Champagne, line number two. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. You were talking about morning glories, and I was wondering what the difference was between morning glories and bindweed, if any.
They're related, but there is a difference. Bindweed tends to be a plant that nobody wants, that I know of. Morning glories, sometimes people actually want them. Morning glories are annuals. They have to come back every year from seed. Bindweed's a perennial, comes back every year from, and unfortunately, bindweed has this horribly long kind of rhizome, roots, everything. And unfortunately, it's really tough to get rid of because when you pull it, it tends to just pop. And then that root just stays in there and then it resprouts. So bindweed is really a tough one to get rid of. But they have a much smaller flower.
Yeah, but they're also pretty. I think they're white and they're the same shape as a morning glory.
Right. They're just much smaller flower. And that's fine. I mean, if somebody likes it, go for it. I mean.
Yeah, well. The flowers are nice. That's about it.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it tends to, as the name implies, it tends to bind around things. And it'll actually, I've seen it engulf juniper bushes and just kill them off just because it just engulfs them and they just get overwhelmed by it. So I have seen that to the point where it will kill off plants. But, you know, a weed is just by definition of what you think a weed is. If people like it, go for it. I think morning glories are a good example of that. Some people hate them and other people like them. So I don't know if that helps you any, but.
Yeah, well, it's curiosity more than anything.
Okay. But yes,
all right,
there is a
good
difference.
Well, I appreciate the call. Others are welcome. We'll be here for about another 5-6 minutes with Sandy. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Here's an email from someone. This is about tree pruning. It says, I have some deciduous trees in my yard that need to be pruned. And after doing some research, I have found two rules. One, don't prune until late winter or early spring. And two, don't prune off more than a third of the tree. So what he wants to know is, do these rules only apply to the pruning of live branches? I'd love to cut off all of the dead branches now when I can still identify them by their lack of leaves and then prune the live ones in the early spring. But if the rules apply to all branches, dead or alive, then I'd be violating rule one for sure. This is a man who wants to stick to the rules. And possibly violating rule two if I lose track of how much pruning I've done. So...
there are fines involved. I want you to know. Yes. If you break the rules, you get fined.
The pruning police,
and the pruning police
will be stopping by.
Sometimes I wish there was pruning police when I've seen some pruning.
Yes.
Yeah, that's another story. Yeah. But I think it's an excellent question because there's the implication that people just automatically know these things. But it's always a good idea to get rid of dead branches. I mean, anytime. Just get rid of them because they really tend to be, you know, it's going to invite insect and disease issues. The tree is unable to sort of heal over. They don't heal like we do, but they sort of heal over those areas, and it can't do that if that branch is still there. So it's always a good idea. Get rid of the dead branches, and you can do that anytime. Just get rid of them. So if he wants to go ahead and do that, that's fine. Now, if he has more than a third of the tree is dead, I'd be wondering what's going on. So anytime you have mature trees, they're always going to get some of those lower branches. Here and there, you're going to have some dead branches, and that's perfectly normal. But if you see more than that, I would really wonder if there's something going on there. And if you've seen a lot of dead branches and it seems like it's gotten worse every year, I'd be doing some investigation to find out maybe what's wrong with it. And also, depending on what the tree is, I don't think we know what the tree is on this.
Other than it's some kind of deciduous tree.
Okay. The reason I say that is there are some diseases that actually can be transferred on the tools. And so if you knew it was things like verticillium wilt, which is real common within maples and even ash and some other trees, you'd really want to make sure that after every single cut, you want to go ahead and use some sort of disinfectant spray, something, before you make the next cut. So that's why it's a good idea. If it's just sort of some general few dead branches, big tree, losing a few branches, not a big deal. If it's more than that, I'd either be on the safe side and make sure that you go ahead and use an antiseptic in between each cut, or do a little bit more investigation before you cut to see if maybe there's some disease issues going on, because you don't want it to spread the disease by using your pruning tools.
Okay. And in terms of timing, I think that it is true that, right, you don't really want to do a lot of pruning of live branches now.
Typically not. We generally want to wait until we've gone. Actually, if you can wait, I think the best thing to do is actually to wait till a little later when we've gone through the really hard period of cold weather and do it more like in February and March when we know hopefully most of the really, really cold stuff is done. But you kind of have to do it when you have time to. So certainly during the winter time, we like things generally to be dormant at that point. For most things.
So, and any time, just going back to the idea of sterilizing your tools, I think there may be people who would say, well, any time that you're doing any kind of pruning or trimming, that's something to keep in mind, because you don't want to, you could have an area on a plant that has disease, you could move it around, or you don't want to move disease from one plant to another plant.
Exactly.
And so something as simple as having a little bucket with some bleach in it, just take your tool in there and swish it around in there, and that's all you need to do.
Yeah, you certainly could do that. Now, I've used bleach before in the past, and you just have to make sure you have really, really old clothing on, because I found out really quick what the deal is with bleach, because you end up with spots
little
all over
white
your clothing.
Dots on your clothes.
So I found that out really quick. Mm-hmm. So I actually like using some of even the kitchen bacterial sprays, kitchen counter bacterial sprays, because they come in a spray bottle. Okay. Just take it out there with you. Every time you make a cut, just spray it down and then go ahead and make the cuts, because we know there are diseases that they can transfer easily on tools. Verticillium is certainly one of the fungal diseases. Fire blight's a bacterial disease. It's very, very easy to spread it between trees as well as within the tree. Things like apples, anything in the rose family, apples, pears in particular, very susceptible to fire blight. So you're just going to make it worse. So you really, really, really want to make sure that you, number one, either find out what's going on, or just, it's probably a good rule to do anyway, at least in between plants, is to go ahead and use an antiseptic spray of some kind. So.
Okay. And again, we'll be here for another couple minutes. Someone's call real quick. We can get you in, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Probably now we're coming into the time of the year where there maybe won't be as much going on. Programs and things going on for gardeners. Is there anything in particular, though, that there will be happening maybe over the next couple of months you might want to mention?
Actually, we are doing a program. Myself and a couple other educators are doing a program called Brighten Your Holidays. And we're going to be doing that. Our first one starts, we're actually doing three of them, one in Champaign, one in Oregon, one in Oakwood. And it's a little of everything from, how to budget. I'm actually doing one on how to bring nature indoors, some wonderful nutritious recipes maybe for your holidays. And those are actually coming up here real soon. The first one, I think, is Tuesday night at the Champaign County office there at 801 North Country Fair Drive. And we're having that in the evening at 6 o'clock, I believe. And so those are really a good program. So people can go to our website and find out about those particular programs. I'm also doing a program with a couple other extension educators on community gardens. This may seem like a funny time to talk about community gardens, but actually on the 1st as well as on the 3rd of November, we're actually doing a statewide telenet on community gardens, sort of how to set one up, some pitfalls, some good things and bad things when it comes to community gardens, and people can check that out. And it's Tuesday at 1 o'clock, and then that Thursday at 7 in the evening. And it's held throughout the state of Illinois, so people can check with their local extension office and get with that program.
Well, this really would be, if you were thinking about setting up something like
that
up,
trying.
Now you want to start thinking about it now, if what you're wanting to do is have this thing ready to go for next spring.
Right. There's a lot of planning. I know community gardens seem to be a really, really popular thing now, and I think it's great. I love it. It's just that there's a lot of planning that should happen before you actually start planting seeds. I mean, the fun part's planting the seeds, and we all like to do that, but it's all that planning stuff that needs to be done ahead of time. So that's why we were trying to get people to think
about
it now.
In addition to having a place and maybe having some, I guess then you have to have some way to allocate space. What particular things do you have to do?
Well, I think probably the big thing is that what's the purpose of the garden? And people have a lot of different reasons. Sometimes they have individual spaces where maybe an 8 by 10 plot is someone in particular rents that out, and that's it. That's the idea, and then everybody has separate plots. Some people have truly community gardens where everybody sort of helps out, and they all take the produce at that point. They may have, there's certainly community gardens now that are for food pantries, and their main purpose is there's volunteers, they come in, they grow the food, and then all the food's donated to a food pantry. So there's lots of different models out there. People just have to figure out which one, what is their real purpose here, and then how to sort of set that up so they don't get into trouble later on when it comes to either, you know, liability, how do we deal with this issue, how do we deal with that issue, and sort of do it all in the very beginning rather than sort of finding out the hard way that you really need to do a little bit more coordination.
Yeah, I suppose it also, it depends, you're going to have to, people are going to be on the same page philosophically about,
absolutely,
are you going to do this organic?
Absolutely.
And what exactly does that mean? What does organic mean,
yep,
to you? And, you know, how do you feel about various kinds of fertilizers, and you know, what's your philosophy,
right,
about the whole thing? Because there are going to be people, I'm sure, maybe it would be sharing the space, who would have different sort of ideas. So you need to get that all figured out,
yeah,
beforehand.
Yeah, maybe the ultimate question is, how do you feel about morning glories?
That would be your test question.
You know, because everybody has a different idea. What do you do with weeds in a community garden? That's another thing to sort of think about.
Real quick here, we're trying to get one more caller, Urbana, line number one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
You have covered this when I was not auditing the broadcast, but I heard you mention daffodils. I have some double-headed ones that bend over, like very stooped position, and eventually the head hits the soil.
So it's almost like they're growing too well, and then they kind of fall over because there's so much weight.
They were sold as double-headed.
Yeah, yeah. And they do have two flowers on them? Or?
Oh, yeah. They have big, bulky,
that's great,
solid, dense.
Yeah, yeah. That might be a really tough one. You might want to, I assume you're not fertilizing, because I wouldn't fertilize them at all. I wouldn't use any nitrogen or anything like that on them. So that would be one thing. And then you may actually want to, I don't know if you've mulched these at all or something along those lines. Sometimes actually just sort of mulching them and making it so they're actually end up being a little bit deeper, if that makes sense. Sometimes the stalks aren't quite as tall then, and then they don't fall over. So you may want to actually, I don't know if you have wood chips or something on them. You might want to think about that, too.
We're going to have to leave it at that. My apologies for cutting that kind of short. Next month, Sandy will be back. It will be
the second Tuesday.
In the meantime, she's available for these sorts of questions, and there are extension people, no matter where you are in the state, someone near you to answer the same questions. So you can look them up in the phone book. And also, you can look for Sandy on, what's it now called?
Mid-America
Gardener. Used to be Illinois Gardener. Now it's the entire Mid-America. Thursday nights at 7 on WILL-TV.
Yes.
Thanks very much.
Thank you. And get with that program.
Well, this really would be, if you were thinking about setting up something like that up.
Trying.
Now you want to start thinking about it now, if what you're wanting to do is have this thing ready to go for next spring.
Right. There's a lot of planning. I know community gardens seem to be a really, really popular thing now, and I think it's great. I love it. It's just that there's a lot of planning that should happen before you actually start planting seeds. I mean, the fun part's planting the seeds, and we all like to do that, but it's all that planning stuff that needs to be done ahead of time. So that's why we were trying to get people to think about it now.
In addition to having a place and maybe having some, I guess then you have to have some way to allocate space, what particular things do you have to do?
Well, I think probably the big thing is that what's the purpose of the garden? And people have a lot of different reasons. Sometimes they have individual spaces where maybe an 8x10 plot is someone in particular rents that out, and that's it. That's the idea, and then everybody has separate plots. Some people have truly community gardens where everybody sort of helps out, and they all take the produce at that point. They may have, there's certainly community gardens now that are for food pantries, and their main purpose is there's volunteers, they come in, they grow the food, and then all the food's donated to a food pantry. So there's lots of different models out there. People just have to figure out which one, what is their real purpose here, and then how to sort of set that up so they don't get into trouble later on when it comes to either, you know, liability, how do we deal with this issue, how do we deal with that issue, and sort of do it all in the very beginning rather than sort of finding out the hard way that you really need to do a little bit more coordination.
Yeah, I suppose it also, it depends, you're going to have to, people are going to be on the same page philosophically about.
Absolutely.
Are you going to do this organic?
Absolutely.
And what exactly does that mean? What does organic mean
yep.
to you? And, how do you feel about various kinds of fertilizers? And, what's your philosophy
right.
about the whole thing? Because there are going to be people, I'm sure, maybe it would be sharing the space, who would have different sort of ideas. So you need to get that all figured out
yeah.
beforehand.
Yeah. Maybe the ultimate question is, how do you feel about morning glories?
Wouldn't that be a good philosophical question?
You know, because everybody has a different idea. What do you do with weeds in a community garden? That's another thing mm-hmm. to sort of think about.
Real quick here, we're trying to get one more caller. Urbana, line number one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
You have covered this when I was not auditing the broadcast, but I heard you mention daffodils. I have some double-headed ones that bend over, like very stooped position, and eventually the head hits the soil.
So it's almost like they're growing too well, and then they kind of fall over because there's so much weight.
They were sold as double-headed.
Yeah, yeah, and they do have two flowers on them, or
oh yeah, they okay. have big, bulky,
that's great,
solid, dense.
Yeah. Yeah, that might be a really tough one. You might want to, I assume you're not fertilizing, because I wouldn't fertilize them at all. I wouldn't use any nitrogen or anything like that on them. So that would be one thing. And then you may actually want to, I don't know if you've mulched these at all or something along those lines. Sometimes actually just sort of mulching them and making it so they're actually end up being a little bit deeper, if that makes sense. Sometimes the stalks aren't quite as tall then, and then they don't fall over. So you may want to actually, I don't know if you have wood chips or something on them. You might okay. want to think about that, too.
We're going to have to leave it at that. My apologies for cutting that kind of short. Next month, Sandy will be back. It will be
the second Tuesday.
In the meantime, she's available for these sorts of questions, and there are extension people, no matter where you are in the state, someone near you to answer the same questions. So you can look them up in the phone book. And also, you can look for Sandy on... what's it now called?
Mid-America
Gardener. Used to be Illinois Gardener. Now
it's the entire
Mid-America. Thursday nights at 7 on
yes.
WILL
yes.
TV. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Before we make way here for a market update, we need to take a little bit more time to remind people how important their support is for the station. We are in the midst of our fall fundraising effort. We'll be here today and tomorrow, and that's it. And we would like to hear from at least 1,200 people by the time that we finish up. Amy Stewart-Ray is here with me in studio. Do you have some kind of an update on how we're doing?
I do actually have an update in terms of how we're doing today. I'm looking at, in terms of a total number of pledges we've received today, 127 pledges of support today, which is a terrific way to start out our Monday. And if you've called to make your pledge, I'd like to thank you right now for showing your support for WILL. But if you've not called yet, if you're waiting for the very end of your drive, go ahead and give us a call. We'd love to hear from you right now. That's 217-244-9455 or go to willpledge.org.
Yeah, we're starting out the week here, and I'm sure that you have all kinds of stuff on your mind and things that you need to get done. And maybe making a pledge is on that list, but it's not the number one thing on the list. Well, maybe you could just bump it up a couple on the list. Help us get your week off to a good start and cross one thing off the list. And the nice thing about it is that it will probably take you about 2 minutes.
Oh, it is
to
easy.
Do it. It doesn't entirely take any time at all.
No, you just call 217-244-9455. Someone is going to walk you through our entire pledge process. It literally takes about 2 minutes. And if you use your credit card to contribute, you're done as soon as you hang up the phone. So give us a call at 217-244-9455 to pledge right now.
Yeah, it's really a continuing challenge for us. We have a lot of challenges here. The media landscape is changing. We're trying to figure out how to manage that challenge. And we have financial challenges. We're trying to figure out how to manage those. But that's one place where, we can turn to you. And that's actually the place that we would like to turn. We would really like to be relying on listeners. And we certainly do. And listeners have stepped up, over the years. other sources, they go in decline. But listener support just keeps on growing, and that's something that actually gives us a pretty good feeling.
Absolutely. It just shows the support we have here in our community from our friends of WILL, and that's a support network that we're looking to grow and continue to develop. And if you're not a part of that community, if you're not a friend of WILL, I urge you to become one right now. 217-244-9455.
We'll break, as we usually do at this point, so we can bring you an update on the commodity markets. Then we'll be back with more Focus, so please stay tuned.
WILL programs are made possible by Strawberry Fields Natural Food Store. Strawberry Fields offers natural vitamins, health and beauty products, household cleaning products, pet foods, and an in-store nutritionist to answer questions about healthy eating. Strawberry Fields on Springfield Avenue in Urbana.
Good morning, everyone. This is Dave Dickey with a look at the commodity markets. We're at mid-session. Grain prices are higher. They're joining other commodities, broad spectrum of commodities that are rallying today, spurred on by an improved manufacturing indicator in China, as well as some optimism that European leaders on Wednesday will reach a deal to tackle the Eurozone debt crisis. Investors heard on Sunday progress being made by European Union leaders toward a new package to shore up the Eurozone, even if those final decisions are not coming until a little bit later this week. And generally speaking, what we're seeing today is equity markets everywhere are performing just a little bit better, and that is in turn easing some nervousness about the European situation.